Blog Talk Radio.
You can dig all day and never find the root. You're gonna get dirty, child, digging for the root. If you're looking for an answer, what's wrong with the truth? Keep digging, child, looking for the root. Look for love, it must be love. Look for love, it must be love. Is a sin. There's no one who can fix it. It's forgiveness in the end. Look for love. It must be love. Look for love. It must be love.
Segment of History Speaks, sponsored by Gospel Gold. Gospel Gold is not just another music program. It is a program designed specifically for the historical preservation of traditional African-American gospel music. Gospel Gold is on every Monday night from the hour of 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We invite you to go to the Gospel Gold Facebook page. Go there. Don't forget to like and share so that you can be a part of the Gospel Gold community. But tonight, it's not about Gospel Gold. Tonight is another segment of History Speaks. One of the things that we wanted to add to our repertoire this year in Gospel Gold is to take some time to talk to those who are history teachers, history professors, history historians, authors, musicians, people who have made history, people who are making history. I think it's important that we connect with those people from time to time to hear what they have to say, to understand where they're coming from. So much of our history has been lost. And one of the things that we wanted to do at Gospel Gold is to preserve some of the history of our people. And the way we can do that is to simply speak one-on-one with people who are in the various fields, people who are scholars, people who are lifelong learners, people who are in every field of endeavor that have made great achievements and are making great achievements in our community. And so tonight, this is the fifth of a series of History Speaks. I call this series Know Thyself. I am so glad tonight that I have with me Dr. Bruce Bridges. Dr. Bridges is an educator. He is a professor. He is the author of a book called Recapturing the African Mind. We're going to talk about that later on in the program. Also, Dr. Bridges is also can be heard on the Time for Awakening telecast, along with Dr. William Rogers on the Black Reality Think Tank. He also hosts his own radio program as well. And so I'm so glad that I have him with me just for this brief while, just to speak to him one-on-one. Dr. Bridges, are you on the line?
I am, Reverend Rogers.
Thank you so very much for being a part of what we're doing here at Gospel Gold. History speaks. One of the things, I'm going to talk about the book in just a few minutes, but one of the things that I wanted to ask you is that what is it, where is your foundation that started you in your quest for learning of history and learning about our people and the connection to Africa and the African-American diaspora? How did that start in your life?
It actually started, Reverend Rogers, with a circumstance being in high school at Durham High School in Durham, North Carolina, and being taught by mostly white professors and beginning to, but not very much, but beginning to realize that we were being left out of the classroom learning environment. Mm-hmm. I would go into classes in science and classes in history and drama classes, and I would go into classes in math and various classes that we take in school, and would never history classes, and would never see black people in the textbooks, never mentioned in the discussions by the professors or the teachers, and never even brought up at all. And so I just knew something was wrong with that picture. Didn't have any proof, didn't have anything to substantiate what I was thinking, but I just knew that we were more involved in what was being taught than what was being said by our white professors, and not just our white professors, but we had very few because Durham High School was predominantly white, but there were a few black teachers. But even in their classes, there was very little discussion about contributions by people of color to civilization or to whatever course it was being taught. Even in music, we didn't discuss too much about black music. We did discuss black music, pardon me, but we didn't know it. I was about to say we were discussing classical music, and we discussed Bach and Beethoven and Wagner and Joseph Haydn and Chopin and some of the other musicians. But we actually were discussing some black people, but I didn't know it. At the time, I didn't know that Beethoven was of African descent and was a black man, but I know that now, you see. So oftentimes we are being shown ourselves in history and being talked about, but when you don't know that that's you that's being talked about, then you're lost. You think it's just another European, another white person. For example, with the pandemic and being at home and people not moving around as much and not having a whole lot to do, I have been doing a tremendous, and I really emphasize that, a tremendous amount of studying. And I'm beginning to find out so much more that I thought I knew that I don't, that I never knew. Mm-hmm. And for example, and we don't have time to go into all this now, but maybe at another point in one of your programs we can discuss it. But I'm even looking at how some of the presidents like George Washington and Abraham Lincoln were men who had dark skin, and see the sources and can point to the sources of the statements by people who knew these people, what they looked like. You see. But we never heard that. But I'm beginning to find these things out now with the advent of the computer and having access to libraries and books all over the world, and begin to understand who Beethoven was, and understand who Joseph Haydn was, and begin to understand who King James was, who authorized the translation of the Bible, and begin to understand the many kings and queens of Europe. And when I say Europe, I'm talking about all the countries. I'm talking about France and Germany and Spain and Portugal and Russia and Denmark and Sweden and Scotland and Ireland and so on and so forth, and how these lands were inhabited by people of color, you see. Mm-hmm. And this is some new information that I'm running into now, and I won't go into it now, but I just wanted to lay it out that. So this is how I really got involved in this, and I'm getting more involved in it now, find out that we have really, Reverend Rogers, been outright lied to, and things mm-hmm. have been covered up. Yes. So that's mm-hmm. really how I got involved and realized. And then when the 60s came, being involved in the black movement in Durham, North Carolina, with men like Howard Fuller and men like Ben Ruffin and Howard Clements, who was on the City Council of Durham, and people like that, and being around them and hearing them say certain things, and then being out in the forefront of the civil rights movements and the boycotts and the pickets, and seeing the brothers on the corner selling the Muhammad Speaks newspaper, and seeing the other brothers selling the Black Panther newspapers, and reading books like Gaddafi's Green Book and Mao Zedong's Little Red Book, and starting to learn. And that's what mm-hmm. really inspired me to get into all this, you see, by realizing that, you know, what's been going on. Okay.
Actually, you're going right into where I wanted to go, because it seems to me that through your study and through your knowledge leads to activism. How does that work?
Exactly.
As a people? And how did it work in your life, and how do we apply it now as a people?
Okay, good. What happens is, and I was listening to Dr. Rogers' show this past Tuesday night, mm-hmm. and we were talking about something very similar. And one of his guests, a sister who works at West Point, was talking about the fact she brings in activities like bringing African dancers and African plays and those kinds of things, African speakers. And she was talking about how there must be forums for these people to perform and to present their material. And that's true. That's true. But my point is, you can't even become active and begin to want to participate in African dance and to perform African dance and to perform African music and to perform African plays until you get your mind intrigued enough to want to do something like that. As an example, the great South African singer, who was married to Stokely Carmichael, Mary McCabe, when she first came to the United States of America, she was going to perform a jazz-type music, but she met Harry Belafonte, and Harry Belafonte said to her to perform some of your own music from the continent of Africa. Not that mm-hmm. jazz is not that jazz is not our music, too, because it is, but he was saying, perform some of your more indigenous African music. So she began to learn and study and took him at his advice. And then I go back to the African entertainer, one of the greatest African entertainers from Nigeria, Fela Kuti, K-U-T-I. Fela Kuti came to America after having grown up in Nigeria and studied in Britain, and wanted to come to America and to perform jazz at the same time. But he met a sister who was a member of the Black Panther Party, who began to teach him about African heritage and African culture, and he didn't believe it. As a matter of fact, he said when she was talking to him about great African kingdoms and the fact that the Greeks had gone into Africa to study, Greeks like Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, he called it BS. We can't say that old gospel gold, but we know what it means. He said, you're talking BS, because he was from the African continent, but he did not know about the contributions of Africa, and that's also by design. So after the sister told him that, she gave him a copy of the autobiography of Malcolm X, and that changed his life. And so he began, we're talking about activism now, so as his mind began to change, because we have to understand, as it says in the scriptures of the Bible, that as a man thinketh, so is he. You see, so when the man or woman begins to change his or her mind, then their actions are going to change. You see, if a man begins to think understand things and contemplate as a woman, that man will begin to act like a woman. But when when you begin to think in a certain way, then your actions are going to be a result of your thinking, you see, because thinking is first, thought becomes first, and then that thought is transferred into action, you see. This is how it happens. So in my case, when I began to learn this knowledge and to understand things, and I am presented to audiences in a lecture environment, as I did when I was at your church during Black History Month last year, or when I'm speaking somewhere in the country, out of the country, wherever, if I'm teaching a class as I've taught, then I have to take this new information that I have, I've learned, and I got to put it out there. I can't just hold it. I have to become active with it, and I pass it on to my students. And then what happens is that knowledge will even make you, as you begin to know, will make you begin to question the system and begin to critically analyze. And then as you begin to do this, you even get up, and sometimes you'll join a march, you'll join a protest, you'll stand up and speak out like Dr. King did. So this is how it happens, you see. So it makes you become that thought generates activity in the same way that the light of the sun that the Creator has given us generates activity in the environment. When the sun is shone upon the environment, plants begin to grow, crops begin to grow, and they begin to get greener and more vibrant, and butterflies begin to flit and flutter, and flies and mosquitoes and everything becomes more active with the sunlight. And in the same way that the sun causes things in the natural world to become active, the sunlight or the light of knowledge causes the human being to become active in the same way. And as I conclude on this subject, when I was teaching African American history at North Carolina State University, I taught it in the classroom, but when I was teaching it, it was also during the time of the apartheid regime in South Africa. So some of my students and I would get together on certain days and made up signs, and would go out on the streets in Raleigh, North Carolina, not too far from the school, and put up signs speaking out against the apartheid system in South Africa. So without having the knowledge of what was going on in South Africa and not knowing the way black people were being subjugated and dominated by the racist white regime, we wouldn't have done that. So the knowledge that I had received and passed on to others caused us to become active. So this is how it is. You just can't sit down this now. Sometimes the knowledge causes us to say, okay, wait a minute. Now we've done business like this. Let me go into business for myself. I want to be independent. You see, that's the reason I opened a bookstore. So knowledge causes us, knowledge precipitate activity. It causes activity to take place.
Good. I agree with you 100%. I understand exactly where it's all connected. I understand that 100%. One of the things,
that's why the slave master during slavery always wanted to keep light or knowledge away enslaved people, because he did not want them to rise up. When Toussaint Louverture and Bookman and Dessalines and the women and men of Haiti rose up against the French and became independent in 1804, on the island of Hispaniola, which became Haiti, when that happened, the slave master did not want that news to go into Durham, North Carolina, didn't want that news to go into Richmond, Virginia, didn't want that news to go into New York City or to New Orleans, Louisiana, or Arkansas, didn't want that news of black people standing up against the slave master and being successful to hit the minds of his black people on his plantation and these other places, because then people might think, well, we can do the same thing, too. Look at what Toussaint and the brothers did down in Haiti. Let's mm-hmm. organize and do the same thing, you see. Mm-hmm. So they want to mm-hmm. keep knowledge away from them, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to make it clear. I can tell
you're
the way
right.
you asked. I think I'm making it clear. I think people can understand.
You're making it clear. You're making it very clear. You're making it very clear. It's all a part of it. I want to go back to something you were talking about earlier. Black history. We've just gone through Black History Month, as we do every year. And it seems as if it's just like something on the calendar. How do we get particularly our young people more interested in Black history?
I think that the more they learn and begin to understand that there's more than what they're even learning, that they become very interested. Because, and I'm just using myself as an example, it's hard to begin to have things uncovered. In other words, if you're at my house and we're having dinner, and I just give you a little bit of dinner, a little bit to eat, a little bit of food, say for 30 days or 28 days in February, I feed you 28 days, but the food is good and you enjoy it, then I cut it off in March 1st. That's not going to work. You're going to say, man, I want some more of that. No, you're going to want some more of it.
That's right,
and it's the same way. It's the same way with drugs. I'm going to the streets now. When mm-hmm. when the dope man sometimes, and I've seen this happen to people that I know, when I've been at parties, the drug man will come in and he will give give a person just give you a little bit, but then he knows that that's business, because once you taste it and that feeling that you receive, that feeling of euphoria and being high. And just depending on what drug it is, or being relaxed, whatever the case is, you're gonna want more of it.
And then
that's how he gets paid. So they'll give you a little bit just to get you started. So yeah. White people only give us a little bit in February, and they don't want to really give us that. But most times, the more we start to get, the more we'll want. And don't care how old you are, or how much you know. Because I'm going back again to myself, man. I'm learning all this stuff, man. I mean, Michelangelo, they covered up all that. Now, white people have taken different kinds of chemicals to put on the statues of black people that has been left in the museums, and whiten those statues, all kinds of things, man, that you can substantiate and can prove this stuff, too. And I had never heard this. I mean, I know they'll go to any length to do what they can to keep us ignorant. But man, it's just—I mean—to give you a fake photograph of the kings and queens of England, and bleach the colors out and make them look white. But then when you go and do the reading and the research of the books that have been written, and people who knew these people, and they give the descriptions and the colors and the height and the weight of these people and what they were doing, then what you read does not coincide with what the Europeans have given us in the pictures, you see. So, and this is what Stokely Carmack used to tell us back in the 60s, and this is what we're really doing here now. We must heighten the contradictions. When the contradictions are heightened, then people are going to want some answers. Like, wait a minute now. I see it in this book here that Abraham Lincoln's mother, Mary Hanks, was a dark-skinned woman, and his father was a dark-skinned German, and then I see this picture you're showing me, that's a contradiction. That mm-hmm. contradiction has been heightened. It's been heightened. It's been shown. Mm-hmm. It's been exacerbated. So anyway, that's what happens, Reverend Rogers. You see, you mm-hmm. get me into this, man. You just get
well, I'm glad I could listen to you forever. Listen, we're going to take a short pause, and we're going to come back and talk about recapturing the African mind. About 2 minutes, get you a sip of water. I'm going to get me a sip of water, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to talk about your book, Recapturing the African Mind, okay?
Yes, sir.
Tonight with Dr. Bruce Bridges, the author of the book Recapturing the African Mind. If you have not picked up that book or had an occasion to look at it, I suggest you do so. The book is full of information, a very interesting read, and you can't put it down. I've had this book now for several years, and I've never gotten Dr. Bridges to sign my copy. I always wanted you to sign my copy, and I never got you to sign my copy. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to ask you about in the book, you talk about the early Western education and the kindergarten system. You say the origins of the Western system of education, which begins in what is known as the nursery school, can be traced to natural creation. The source of nurse, which is formed of the root nursery, is the Latin term nurserer, which also gives the English word nourish. Although the word nurturer originally meant suckle, it was later generalized to mean feed, nourish, and to look after. Nursery is associated with children as well as with young plants. You talked about it earlier. Plant nurseries, for example, are especially familiar to everyone who knows about the caring of plants. Consequently, it becomes evident that very early in development of any human relationships are seen between the mind and natural creation. The same kinds of activities conducted by the botanists are also conducted by those skilled in child rearing. Could you break that down?
Yes, yes. What I'm saying is that in the same way that the botanists will grow plants and will take that plant and will give it certain fertilizer, certain, which is food, feed that plant and cause that plant to grow by keeping it in a certain either controlled if it's in a greenhouse or if it's in an uncontrolled environment, just out in the weather in the sun, it wants it to receive sun. So it does all these things so that the plant can grow and so that that plant can develop. And that's the same thing that is done in the human life with parents and children or with adults, as you and I are talking now, myself and your listening audience, you begin to nourish the mind in the same way that the plant is nourished on a physical level. When you are dealing with the human being, the teacher or the preacher or the mentor or the professor or whoever it is rearing the plant, and that's how we're looking at the human mind, just like we look at the plant, you feed that mind in the same way that you feed that plant. You feed that plant fertilizer from Lowe's and Home Depot, but you feed that mind by going to the library, or nowadays, I keep saying, or going to the computer, getting new information, and you feed that mind in the same way the plant is fed. And, of course, we feed the human being also on the physical level. You got to eat proper foods in order to develop and to grow your muscles and your joints and bones and everything like they're supposed to. But on the mental level, our minds have to be fed. That's why it's very important that preachers and teachers or anybody who stands in front of black people and begin to talk, they should always say, well, how can I feed my people? How can I feed my congregation? And these kinds of things. And really, not just black people, but you know, and I'm going back to something I said earlier, and that is about us not being exposed. Actually, most white people are not exposed to this kind of information that we're having tonight on Gospel Gold or some of the information that I've been giving out thus far. Most of them do not know this, but, and that's also by design, because the people who rule, who control, and who dominate the world, people in high places, they have hidden the materials, have hidden the manuscripts, have destroyed manuscripts in many cases, locked them in vaults to keep them away from the masses of the people, whether they be white or black, and to keep the ignorant whites, who actually should be on the side of black people because they're in the same condition, in the same situation, but they are kept divided and away from us by those in power to keep us fighting so that the rulers can continue to rule. And this is what you begin to find out the more studying that you do. So the information that you have here, let's see, where was I? I was somewhere. Oh, I did a Zoom call about a couple of weeks ago when black people were black before we turned white in March. But in February, when we were black, I did a lecture at a college out in Seattle, Washington, and I was given some information, and there was a professor who was there, and I was talking about the origins of algebra, and she said that she taught algebra for 5 years. This is at the end of my lecture. She made the comment. She said, I taught algebra for 5 years in the high school before I even started working at this college that we are at now. It's called Centralia College. She said, I taught algebra for 5 years, and I never knew where algebra came from or how it got its name algebra until you gave that information out. And she's, I guess, probably maybe 65 years, 67 years old now, but she taught algebra 25 or 30 years ago and taught it for 5 years and never knew some information that I gave because she hadn't been exposed to it. So it doesn't really matter the color necessarily of the person, but it is to the advantage of those in power to keep the poor and the oppressed people, no matter what color, fighting each other and saying that you're different from me because I'm white and you're black, or you're black and I'm white, and keep us fighting to keep things going on, you see, so they can rule. So again, I haven't forgotten the point now. So that's why the plant has to be nourished, and not just the black plants, but the white plants need to be nourished too, because they need nourishment in the same way. And so I hope that kind of answers your question. And as a matter of fact, Frederick Froebel, who came up with the concept of the kindergarten, who they talk about in education classes at colleges and universities around the world, the German educator Frederick Froebel, he actually came up with the whole idea of the kindergarten, which comes from two German words, kinder, which means children, and garden, like a garden, the children's garden, when he was studying the studying his uncle. His uncle was an agriculturalist and a gardener, and he saw the way his uncle was treating plants, and that's how Frederick Froebel came. He said, the same way he's treating those plants is the way that we should treat children. So he came up with the kindergarten or the children's garden. And at one point I like to always make, and that is that any knowledge or any information that we are blessed to have or to be exposed to, it has to be traced back to the natural creation. The creator of the heavens and the earth, God Almighty, put all of this information around us for us to study from. And that's why the last thing that was created, when you read Genesis, after everything was created, the sun, the moon, the stars, the planets, the bees, the birds, the alligators, the crocodiles, the bumblebees, everything, after everything was created, then human beings were put in the garden to learn from what the Creator had put around us. So it's no need for us to become arrogant or to become high and mighty because we get a degree or two or three or four or whatever, and to think that we know it all, that we have to take it back and give credit to the source from which all things emanate, and that is the one God.
Speaking of that, one of the segments in the book, I think it is under the manufacturing of a slave in America, you talked about, you said the white man distorted the Bible into a defense for slavery and taught the Negro the passive virtues of Christianity, partly in the hope of making him tractable and content with servant life. Could you go into that as well?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, and I'd like to always make it clear, too, for my friend, your friend, too, Dr. Maxwell, and also Dr. William Rogers, we have to also say that all the religions that human beings celebrate and follow today were originally from the heads of African people along the African, in the African continent. All these religions came from us. But the version that we have been given of the scriptures and of Christianity has come from a European perspective. And as John Henry Clark, a great historian, says, that during the Council of Nicaea, 325 AD, Europeans began to make the religion of Christianity a political weapon to be used to enslave people. That's not what it was from the beginning. Christianity is our religion. Islam is our religion. Buddhism is our religion. It all came from us. But the version of that religion which has been given has been altered and given to us in another form, and from a European white supremacist perspective. And most of our teachers and trainers, preachers, give it back to us the way it was given to them. But once you begin to understand, then you know that it's your religion. We can use it to uplift ourselves, but it has to be given from our perspective. And this is what Dr. Cohn talked about in his whole idea of the black theology when he was around, Dr. James Cohn, you see. And he was talking about, Cornel West talked about it, but they talked about it from the black perspective. So it's our religion, but it has been altered. But the one that I talk about in my book, and I also have a picture in my book of the slave mistress reading to the children, and she's reading from the Bible, and that's another thing Europeans have never wanted us to read. And but when we were learning to read, that was also controlled. You were only allowed to read certain things. And I talk about this in my book, about how the one book that they would always allow us to read was the Bible, because they knew it was a Bible that had been prepared in Europe and had been given to us as a weapon to keep us under control. So that's why that was given. But black liberation theology, no. Don't let them have any, but don't let them listen to any James Cone. Don't let Jeremiah write in your church. No. You know, don't let Bruce Bridges speak at your church, because if the Bible is being discussed, it's going to be discussed about how we were enslaved people and how we need to be like Moses and how the people, children of Israel, were oppressed, and we are that people, and we need to stand up and do what they did. And this is what happened with Nat Turner. Nat Turner was a preacher, but Nat Turner turned that Bible around and used it to begin to fight against the slave master and to free many people off the plantation in Virginia. You see, during the Nat Turner slave revolt of 1831. You see, so this is what it is that we have to recognize, that all of the religions of mankind came from the heads of black people who developed these religions in the Nile Valley and gave them to the world, but they were transformed into something else for control. Even when you look at the scriptures of the Hindus in India, most Indians now that you see who are our pharmacists, a lot of them are our doctors, and Walensky and some of those people who work with the COVID, they're Indians. Most of them have grown up under Hinduism, and Hinduism is a religion that the Bible of the book of scripture of the Hindu people called the Mahayanas and the Hinayanas and other kinds of things. We don't get into that now, but they were altered to show that white people were supreme to black people, and that black people were cursed. And that's why in India today they have a group of people called the Dalits or the Sudras, and these people are the untouchables, and they're at the bottom of the social system in India even today. You see, so the European has tampered with every bit of scripture in the world, but these scriptures originally came from us.
Mm-hmm. In chapter 4 of your book, you talk about the humanitarians. Who are these humanitarians?
Okay, I think you're talking about that chapter with William Wilberforce.
Right.
And Thomas Falwell Buxton. Mm-hmm. And these people, these were Europeans in England who knew that something was wrong with the slave trade, and they wanted to abolish the physical movement of people from one shore to another. But at the same time, then they call themselves humanitarians because, as you know, there's a black college in Ohio called Wilberforce University, named after William Wilberforce, who's in my mm-hmm. book. But they mm-hmm. named it after him because William Wilberforce spoke out against slavery. But when they spoke out against slavery, they were talking about physical slavery. But at the same time, if you read that chapter in my book, I talk about how they spoke out against physical slavery, but they were going to import Christianity into the African nations and to teach them Christianity, but from a European perspective. And so they were called humanitarians, but they were against the slave trade on the physical level, but they were going to take our minds. And that's what my book is called, Recapture African Mind. They were going to take our minds and lock our minds up and control us and give us this religion. So they were humanitarians on one hand, but on the other hand, they were enslavers through the mental aspect. You see,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I'm glad you asked these questions too, because I can tell you've been reading my book.
There's one or two other things I want to do before we run out of time. I wanted to, you talked about
like
African
how they can get them. I want you to, at some point, maybe at the end, let people know how they can get a copy of my book
We'll definitely do that. But one of the things I want you to speak on is the fact that the African-centered education is a tool. You said the organizations and buildings of Afrocentric institutions as a part of community life of African people is very important. The basic focus of these institutions is to be away from the traditional training of white America in Europe. Social clubs, business organizations, religious groups do not have to be a copy of those in the dominant society. A fundamental question should be asked, do we have the growth and the survival of African people at the core of our philosophy? Could you expound on that?
Yes. What I'm saying is, if you're going to be an elk, if you're going to be a mason, if you're going to be a Shriner, If you're going to be a Delta Sigma Theta, if you're going to be in Alpha Kappa Alpha fraternity, or Omega Psi Phi, or Kappa Alpha Psi, or if you're going to be in the Jack and Jill Club or the Boy Scouts of America, then whatever we do, we should do it from a black perspective. That's mm-hmm. really what I'm talking about there. And as you can find out, though, which is also another very interesting discussion, that is, I've done quite a bit of research, too, on the origin of fraternities and sororities, how mm-hmm. the alphas, the kappas, and all those came from African societies that were turned into Greek letter fraternities and sororities in the same way that the Bible was whitened. The same thing happened with the what they would call African fratries, P-H-R-A-T-I-E-S, fratries, which meant brotherhoods and sisterhood. But from that word fratries is where you get fraternities, you see. Mm-hmm. And so, but they started in Africa. And in the same way that the Boy Scouts of America were started when Lord Baden-Powell, the white so-called founder of the Boy Scouts, went to South Africa. He's from England, went to South Africa and saw the African boys being introduced into manhood by learning how to survive in the woods and how to tie knots and how to fish and get food, how to build campfires. Mm-hmm. That's the Boy Scout.
Exactly.
You are anybody who's listening. Right. But that's where it came. He saw that, and then he took it back to England and developed it into the Boy Scouts of America. But we are the roots and the source of that, you see. So that's what I'm trying to say. Most of the things that we see in European society that we think are white, they, if you look at it and uncover it, it's probably from us, but it's just been turned to us. For example, the Christian religion, you go into a religion class, they don't talk about Tertullian. They don't talk about Saint Cyprian. They don't talk about Saint Augustine and the popes and Alexander de Medici and the black popes and saints of Europe. They don't discuss that at these white theological seminaries for the most part. But it all came from us. St. Mm-hmm. Augustine from Hippo, North Africa. St. Augustine from North Africa. You see, mm-hmm. in his confessions, he talks about this, you see. So that's what I'm trying to say. Whatever it is we're doing, it should have a black leaning or an inclination towards doing something for our people. You go into a black church, you're supposed to know that you're in a black church. The way you're going to know anyway by seeing the rituals and the things that we do. But also, what comes out of the mouth of the preacher, the superintendents of the Sunday school, the deacons, should also have black people at the heart of it.
I agree with you exactly. I understand exactly what you're saying in that particular part, and I understand exactly what this book means. It is a very important book. I think that everyone should pick up a copy of Recapturing the African Mind and have it a part of your household. It's a good read for adults and for children. And perhaps the adults can sit down with the children and read together, and they can study together this book. Dr. Bridges,
too, Reverend Rogers, you notice too that I purposely, and I'm saying this for your listeners, because sometimes people won't order a book or won't buy a book because the print is too small. If you notice, I use large print on purpose, and I use black on white on purpose, mm-hmm. because those contrasts are easier to see than some books with small print and it's all yellow in paper. But I use white clear paper and black print and larger print so that our people could read it and try to understand it. And so that's why I did that on purpose. You know, I want to make it easy for our people to get the information.
It is very accessible. Thank you so much. I can read it without my glasses. I thank God for that. But where can we pick up this book? Where can this book be found?
Okay, right now the best place to get that is to give me a call, and I'm going to give out the number, if you don't mind, where any of your listeners can call. All right, they can give me a call, and I'm going to give you a couple of minutes to go ahead and get a pencil or a pen to write with. I'm going to take my time and make it real slow. They can get a copy of the book by dialing 919-956, that's 919-956-5969, 972. Again, 919-956-5972. And leave me a message and I'll get back with you and tell you how you can get a copy of the book if I don't answer. But that's the best way to get it, at 919-956-5972. As a matter of fact, I'm having some printed right now. They should be ready right now. I need to go pick them up, some fresh copies, because after I did that program out in Seattle, Washington, I got some orders that I have to fill, so I tried to get them right out. So that's how you can get it.
One of the things that I like about your book is that it's not only is it a good book, but in the very back, the bibliographies, you have a plethora of books here. I'm talking about books for any occasion, for anyone to pick up. It's more information in the back of this book than I've seen in a lot of books. And one of the things that I like about this book is that after you read this book, you can go in the back and you can find of the books that are back there, the authors, the titles, everything from Christianity to African beliefs, Egyptian belief and modern thought, African reactions.
Right.
And how did, you know, I know you talked earlier about having a bookstore. How did you amass this type of information? How does that come about?
You know, that's a good question, Reverend Rogers. What happened is I was doing, when I did a radio talk show in Durham, North Carolina, called the Cultural Awareness Seminar,
mm-hmm.
on Thursday nights for the community, I was speaking at, and this is before I even had a bookstore, I was speaking from St. Joseph Church on Fayetteville Street, and I began to see from my studies, as I talk about in the preface of my book, I began to see that wherever European people have traveled throughout the world, they would always build two institutions. They would always construct a church and a school. I just noticed that when I was teaching world civilizations at St. Augustine's College in Raleigh, North Carolina. I noticed that when they went anywhere into Spain, when the Spanish and the Portuguese and the British went into China, went into India, when they traveled or migrated to the islands of the Caribbean, they would always build a school. And then I thought back on my Gunsmoke and Cheyenne cowboy days and looking at television and how when we looked at Wells Fargo, there would always be Restless Gun. They'd always be talking about you know what I'm talking about. That's right. They would always talk about the Indians, and these Indians would be on a reservation. And on the reservation, the Indians had to cut their hair. They had to learn English. They had to learn everything that Europeans were learning. And so I said, they're trying to indoctrinate every single human being that they come into contact with into their culture and their ways of doing things. And I began to study that, and I learned that they would always send in, which is another lecture that I used to do, they would always send in what I call the three M's, the letter M, the three M's. They would always send in the missionaries, the merchants, and the military. The missionaries to go in among the people, be they the Indians of India, be they the Filipinos of the Philippine Islands, be they the Chinese, they would send in the missionaries with the Bible. Not the Bible that we're talking about that will resurrect our people and make us stand up and begin to think and to do what Martin Luther King did. Not that Bible, but they brought in the Bible from the white perspective, and then after the missionaries brought the Bible in, then the merchants would come in and begin to steal the gold and the diamonds and the silver from the so-called New World in America. All the resources, the merchants would take control of that. And then the third M of the three M's would be the military. They would station a military in the Philippines. There's a base in the Philippines now. There's a base in Puerto Rico. There's a base, you know what I'm saying? Bases all over the world so that they could keep the people in control. And all of these three M's, missionaries, merchants, and military, have been mechanisms to control and to destroy the minds of people of color all around the world, and then to take their resources. And that's really what it's all about, to control the resources and the gold and the riches of the whole entire planet that the Creator put out here around us. And so when I discovered that, I began to do these lectures, and I started to compile the lectures and to do more research, and because that's another thing I wanted to have in my book, not just to talk about these things, but I wanted people to, and if you notice in my book, just about every page you turn to, I give you sources where you can find this information that I'm talking about. You see, because people say, where is he getting this stuff from? It's not me. This is what the scholars have said even before we were born, you see. And not just the books, but also I did the same thing with words. If you notice, I employ the principle of etymology. I go into the origins of words. I dissected the word gospel in the book, if you recall, how the word gospel came from the word Godspell.
Godspell, right.
That's right. You remember? That's right. And I talked about the catechisms and the way the Catholic would teach the catechism in their schools and those kinds of things. And then I even talked about our literature and how books like Black Beauty we thought was about a horse. But like I talked about earlier, things have been covered so much, you find out that it was not about a horse, but Black Beauty was about black people being controlled by white people in the same way that the jockey controls his horse, and the way he rides his horse, and the way he raises his horse, and even the way that the offspring of the horse or the foal is trained, and all this is in Black Beauty, that's really talking about the training and the upbringing of black people on the plantation and how horses were moved from one owner to another. Black people were traded from one plantation to another in the same way. So many of the stories and the tales, and even in our music, is talking about us. But as I said at the beginning, which is a good way for us to conclude, when you don't know who you are, take a mirror and put it in front of your face and let you look at that mirror and look at your face in that mirror. And I can ask you the question, who is it that you're looking at in that mirror? And you'll say, I don't know.
Wow. Well, Dr. Bridges, we can leave it right there. I thank you so very much for being on our program tonight. You have given us much food for thought. I encourage everyone to go out and pick up this wonderful book, Recapturing the African Mind. It is a book that we all need to read. It's a book that we need to pass down from generation to generation. With Dr. Bridges, I got about 2 minutes. Is there anything that you would like to say before we close out?
I want to just thank you for having me, and I'd like to come back at some point. And also, if I could, just give my number out one more time if people want to get the book real quick.
Go right ahead.
Area code 919, in case you forget that, that's the North Carolina area code, 919-956-5972. Thank you very much for having me, Dr. Rogers.
Thank you so very much. These programs will be running periodically throughout the year. All of these interviews that I'm doing on Gospel Gold will be run throughout the year. Of course, our year ends in December. I will be running these interviews periodically throughout the year. I'm going to post them on the Gospel Gold group's Facebook page. You go there and you will find, along with the Gospel Gold program, you'll find History Speaks. This is part number 5, Know Thyself with Dr. Bruce Bridges. Thank you all so very much for listening tonight, and we pray God's blessing upon all of you. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Thank you, Dr. Bridges. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You can dig all day and never find the root. You're gonna get dirty, child, digging for the root. If you're looking for an answer, what's wrong with the truth? Keep digging, child, looking for the root. Look for love, it must be love. Look for love, it must be love. To be born is original. wrong is a sin. There's no one who can fix it. It's forgiveness in the end. Look for love. It must be love. Look for love. What's wrong with